Today will be our first and probably only lecture on Nuchanoth and Kwakwala alphabets. I'd like to start with this 1890 report that I showed you a couple of weeks ago. This is the document where Franz Boas first proposed that Nuchanoth and Kwakwala are related, although at the time he referred to them as Nootka and Kwagyulth. If you look at some of his forms, you'll see that these are barely recognizable, although you know some of these words. Can you see this well enough to recognize any words that you know? Go ahead, call it out, please. So far we've recognized the roots nuk for drink, hups or hup for hair. Any others? Yu'i for wind, yola in Kwakwala. Tatus for star in Nuchanoth, Kwakwala tutu. Good. But you'll see that these are difficult to read if you're not used to reading his transcription system. At the time, Boas was writing these as well as he could. He had a very good ear, but he had an inadequate alphabet. Yes, someone noticed that he wrote a K instead of a Q. Probably that's because he hadn't noticed the difference yet. I think he was aware of that difference, but he wrote this when he first heard these languages, and he had not had enough time yet to get used to distinguishing the K and the Q. Later, he got much better at distinguishing those sounds in Kwakwala. The alphabets that you're used to have their start in the 1930s. That's when the phonetic alphabets that we use today started, and I'm going to be talking about that. But this document that we're looking at now, Boas's 1890 report, this is about 40 years before that time. So at that time, there was no adequate alphabet for writing Native American languages. Now, some of you may know that Edward Sapir was a student of Franz Boas. Boas is a big name in Kwakwala studies. Sapir is a very big name in West Coast studies. And Boas was from the older generation, and he was one of Sapir's teachers. Both of these scholars ended up being very important figures in the development of North American anthropology and linguistics. And it's kind of a coincidence that they also happen to work on the languages that we're studying here. One of Sapir's students was Morris Swadesh, who co-wrote the Nootka Texts volume with Sapir, co-edited it, I should say, because the texts themselves, of course, came from Nuchanoth elders, especially from Saya Chepis. And elders that some of us have known knew Morris Swadesh personally. So a certain Hupachaset elder who did a bit of work on the language and produced a lot of the resources that the Hupachaset people have now, remembered meeting Morris Swadesh when Swadesh was a grown man and this elder was a boy. So there's a link through living memory back from Boas to Sapir to Swadesh to today. Boas was German. Sapir was born in Prussia but grew up in the US, and they both lived and worked most of their lives in North America. Here's a document that some of you have seen before. This is the Rival Whalers. This was the first Nuchanoth text that Sapir published. He published this in 1924. So this was 15 years before the Nootka Texts volume. Here's where the text begins. Can I ask someone to read the first couple of sentences? No, you're right. Keep going. The first word is Usimchuk. I will read the first couple of sentences that Josh just read for us, but I'll read them exactly the way they're written. Josh was reading them in the accent that he's learned, which is a central accent, but this is actually a Barkley Sound dialect. Usimchuk ma'ak ihtup qualisits. Those are the first two sentences. I'll read those one more time. In your dialect, Tom, this would be something like Does that make sense? The main reason I'm showing you this story now is to show you how different the writing system that Sapir was using in 1924 was compared to the one we use today. And Sapir and Boaz were using basically the same system of English letters and borrowed letters from other alphabets in an attempt to write these languages they were studying. This report by Boaz is from 1890, and that was when he made one of his first trips out to the west coast of North America. And that's when he first worked with Nuchonalth and Kwakwala speakers. And this text that I'm showing you, The Rival Whalers, this was published in 1924, but Sapir probably collected it around 1910. 1910 was when Sapir came to what's now Port Alberni and worked with Syed Chapis and other fluent speakers. Now, it happens that Sapir's experience working with Syed Chapis and his grandson Alex Thomas led to a very important discovery that was fundamental to modern linguistics, and that was the discovery of the phoneme. Phonemes are not easy to understand, but basically they are the psychological sounds of the language as opposed to the phonetic sounds of the language. For example, the barred lambda in Kwakwala and Nuchonalth represents a particular sound of these languages, tla, tla, which tends to sound to English speakers like a KL. English speakers tend to hear kla, but in Kwakwala and Nuchonalth, tla is treated as a single sound. It is phonetically complex, but it is a single sound. Linguists would say it is a single phoneme. And it was through Sapir's work with fluent speakers like Alex Thomas that he discovered this concept. And I'm going to tell you part of that story. Sapir recounts these details in a 1933 paper. And the idea began when he noticed that Alex Thomas was very interested in what he was doing, so he taught Alex how Sapir taught Alex how Sapir was writing Nuchonalth, and then Alex started writing Nuchonalth, which was his native language, and Sapir noticed that Alex was writing it differently from him, and he realized that Alex was writing the sounds and categories that were in his own head, and this affected the way that Sapir analyzed this language and other languages as well. Here's a quote from Sapir. Alex's orthography, meaning how he writes, as is natural, is phonologic in spirit throughout, and it is largely from a study of his texts that I've learned to estimate at its true value the psychological difference between a sound and a phoneme. And here are some particular examples from Nuchonalth. The words here are papi, meaning ear, tsa'ak, meaning river, and ma'miqsu, meaning older sibling. The first column is how Sapir wrote these when he first heard them. The second column shows how Alex Thomas wrote them, and the third column shows how we write them today. Now, the interesting thing is that papi and tsa'ak have so-called glottalized obstruents. The p and the t are obstruent sounds. More specifically, they are plosives. They involve a brief moment of silence followed by an explosion. Ma'miqsu has resonant consonants. M is a resonant consonant, meaning that it involves a lot of vibration in the throat. Now, ma-miksu, as you all know, who study Nuchonalth, has glottalized M's, but glottalized resonance sounds significantly different in Nuchonalth from glottalized plosives. Glottalized plosives have a stronger explosion. P-p-i, t-a-uk. Glottalized resonants have what sounds like a glottal stop before them. Ma-miksu, ma-miksu. So you see that Sapir wrote them differently. He wrote them the way they sounded to him. Now look at how Alex Thomas wrote these words. Alex Thomas learned that the Sapir used an exclamation point to write a glottalized sound, and he used the same exclamation point that that they used in Papitsa Uk. He also used that to write Ma Miksu, which shows that to Alex there was something similar between the consonants of Papitsa Uk on the one hand and the consonants of Ma Miksu on the other. In other words, both of these are glottalized, even though they're different kinds of glottalization and they sound significantly different. They're part of the same category, and all of these glottalized consonants in Uchonalth can result from what we call hardening, and that is why today we write them with in the same style, with a hard sign over the top of the letter to show that in this language these behave similarly, even though they sound significantly different. In technical terms, we would say that these are glottalized phonemes. Glottalized M is a unitary phoneme in Uchonalth, even though to someone who doesn't speak Uchonalth, it might sound like two sounds. That is a very brief introduction to the complex notion of phoneme. Are there any comments or questions about that before I move on? You don't have to understand phonemes in this class, but I think that this is a fascinating and important story because it was a young man from the area where some of us live right now who gave Sapir the information he needed to discover this concept. I'm glad you brought that up. I actually wasn't going to talk about the International Phonetic Alphabet, but we should. It's part of the story. The International Phonetic Alphabet was founded in the 1800s. So it was being developed right about the same time that Boas was doing his early research. So Boas must have known about it, but he doesn't seem to have used it. We just had a question about the International Phonetic Alphabet. When was it developed? What does it have to do with these alphabets used by Boas and Sapir? The International Phonetic Alphabet was developed at the end of the 1800s, so right about the same time that Boas was doing his early research on the West Coast. And Boas must have known about it, but he doesn't seem to have used it. It did not seem to be well enough established by that time, or else Boas just didn't like it. I don't know why Boas didn't use the IPA, but I'm showing you the modern IPA. This is what the IPA looks like today. And there aren't that many sounds in the IPA that we use in our modern alphabets here in North America, I mean. That is the Nuchonalth and Kwakwala alphabets. One thing that our local alphabets have in common with the IPA is the X letter. We use X for the spirant sound that has the same place as K. And we use the glottal stop, the same symbol for glottal stop. Also, the pharyngeal stop, you'll see, is part of the IPA. Although in IPA, it represents a fricative, that is aspirant. We use it in Uchonalth for the pharyngeal plosive, but it's the same symbol. But there aren't very many others. Does anyone notice any others? Oh, Q, I guess, is the same. Liquid alphabet in Uchonalth use Q in the same way that IPA does. But the symbol for the barred L sound in IPA is this loopy L. Do you see it? They use the loopy L, but we generally use the slash L here on the West Coast. I didn't mention letters like P, T, K, M, S, because those are straightforward, right? Those represent the same sounds in English, Kwakwala, and Uchonalth, and everyone uses those same symbols. Now I want to draw your attention to this 1934 paper called Some Orthographic Recommendations, arising out of discussions by a group of six American linguists. I'll skip to the end where the authors are listed. George Herzog, Stanley Newman, Edward Sapir, Mary Haas Swadesh, Morris Swadesh, and Charles Vogelin. So Sapir and the two Swadeshes worked on West Coast languages. Sapir and Swadesh worked on Uchonalth, and Mary Haas worked on DT-DOT. So the recommendations in this paper are directly informed by West Coast languages. And of course, they would have been well aware of Kwakwala, although Sapir and his students did not work on Kwakwala, as far as I know. Now, here's a key part of the proposal. It is in this paper that these authors proposed using a raised W for labialized, that is, rounded sounds. And they proposed the lambda and the barred lambda. Do you see these towards the bottom? The barred lambda for TL and the lambda for DL. So those letters date to this paper, which came out in 1934. And here is Nootka Texts, which came out 5 years later, 1939. This is a very important collection of texts in Nunchaknoth that today we generally call the Sapir-Thomas texts to recognize the important contribution of Alex Thomas. Sapir was here only for a few months in 1910 and 1911. Afterwards, it was Alex Thomas who collected these stories from his elders, wrote them out, and mailed them to Sapir. They were then edited by Sapir and later by Morris Swadesh. Here is the first text in the Sapir-Thomas texts. Can someone read the first couple of sentences, please? Chu, chisma. I'm going to read that again for the recording. I'm recording this lecture. Tanakmis. There was a chief who had a daughter. She got pregnant and had a baby, which was a boy. The alphabet of this of the Nootka Text volume is almost the alphabet that we use today. There's a few small differences, but it's basically the alphabet that we use today. So it's quite a bit easier to read. Can someone point out a difference? How is the alphabet used in Nootka Text different from the one we use today? The two most important differences between the modern Nunchaknoth alphabet and the one used in Nootka Texts is that the sound that we represent with the letter U today is represented with the letter O in Nootka Texts. And long vowels, which we write today with double letters, were written in Nootka Text with a dot after the vowel letter. Now the use of O for U is based on the actual pronunciation of that sound. So in Sapir's time, the sound that we write as U today sounded a lot more like O. So he wrote ha kwatluk as ha kwatluk because that's how it was pronounced back then. Ha kwatluk. He wrote it like an O. And if you listen to very old recordings, the further back you go, the more U's sound like O's in old recordings of Nunchaknoth. I'm now showing you Boaz's Kwakwala grammar. This was published in 1947 after his death. So it was edited by his daughter and another scholar to the best of their ability. It has a lot of mistakes in it, unfortunately. Because Boaz wasn't alive to double check it. But you'll see from this that even to his death, Boaz did not adopt these recommendations. The recommendations in the 1934 paper by Sapir, Herzog, and the others, he didn't use them. He kept he eventually developed his own way of writing Kwakwala, and he never stopped writing it that way for the rest of his life. I've zoomed in a bit, so maybe you can see some words you recognize. Some of you Kwakwala learners, do you recognize any words here, and can you read them for us? Yeah, so just on this page, we see some common words like humps for head, bagwants for visiting or visitor. These are words that are common today and are just barely recognizable, but the alphabet that Boaz used until his death was quite different from the ones we use today. It takes a while to get used to reading it, But I highly recommend those of you who are learning Kwakwala, who haven't learned to read Boaz's alphabet yet, do so, because that will give you access to the huge amount of materials that were recorded by George Hunt and Boaz. The exclamation marks in Boaz's writing show glottalized sounds. So this word for shelter is tents with a hard T. The word for raw is kilch with a hard K. And you might remember that Sapir used the exclamation point as well for glottalized sounds when he was first writing Nuchanov. The next step in the development of local alphabets was in the publishing of important documents. So it's often the case that the alphabet for a particular language gets decided by whoever publishes something important first, and then most people generally adopt that alphabet. Here is an important document that was published around 1981 in the Campbell River area. So we have some recognizable sentences here. Matsatligada, what is this? It's a pencil. And this is basically the alphabet that is still used today in Campbell River. So, as far as I know, that alphabet was established by books like this and by the fact that quite a few elders in the 1970s, from the East Coast and the West Coast of Vancouver Island, took classes either at UVic or from scholars who were from UVic. There was an outreach, and people took classes not unlike the classes that we're taking today, but this happened 50 years ago. And I think Diana might be able to tell us more about that because she took part in that. Diana, can you tell us anything about the classes that you took in the 70s or 80s? Just as important as the UVic programs that taught phonetics to people all over the island were this set of books that came out, that were published in Alert Bay in 1981. So these are the Learning Kwakwala series, published in Alert Bay in 1981. They were written by Jay Powell, Vicki Jensen, Agnes Cranmer, and Margaret Cook. And you'll see that these books use the what today we call the Utmista alphabet. Yutman Abumpuch, this is my mother. Hetman Abumpi, that's my mother over there. This is not the type of phonetic alphabet that linguists usually use. Rather, it is a more practical alphabet that was designed for someone who only had a typewriter. So you'll see where the Likwala alphabet uses the schwa letter, that's the upside down E for the schwa sound for a. The Utmista alphabet uses the A underline. That's because a standard typewriter doesn't have the schwa symbol, but it does have both A and underline, which can be combined to make this symbol. What a lot of people don't know is that this alphabet was first devised by an anthropologist named Randy Bouchard, who was based in Victoria for many years. He started working around the 1960s, and he is mostly retired now, but now living in Mill Bay, I believe. But starting in the 60s, Randy Bouchard did a lot of work with tribes all over British Columbia. He organized that work under a project called the BC Indian Language Project, BCILP, and he developed this practical alphabet because he used a typewriter. Then when Powell and the others who wrote these books devised their alphabet for these books, that alphabet was chosen. I don't know the reasons for that. That must have been a discussion that happened at Utmista Cultural Center. Does anyone have anything to add to that? Why this version of Bouchard's alphabet was chosen by Utmista? Dana mentions Reverend Hall. He was a missionary in the Alert Bay area in the late 1800s. I believe he preached in Kwakwala, and he translated hymns into Kwakwala, and a lot of those hymns are still sung to this day in the Alert Bay area and other places. And so you'll still find those hymns written in some of them written in Alfred Hall's way of writing. I suspect that when these books were developed by Utmista, a couple of different alphabets were considered, and the elders who were there said they liked Bouchard's, possibly because it looked more like Hall's, possibly because it had more recognizable symbols. But I don't know the full story behind how that was chosen. The important thing for us now is that the UVic programs in Campbell River and the Upmista books published in Alert Bay established the two alphabets that are still used today to write Kwakwala. So that is why we have materials both in the Upmista alphabet, mainly coming from Alert Bay, but also Fort Rupert and other places up there. And the Liquila alphabet coming from Campbell River and environs. I'm showing you now a part of a paper that Marianne Nicholson and I wrote in 2009. The paper is about determiners, but we have an appendix on alphabets because there's so much to say. And we give some information about where the different Kwakwala alphabets come from. Including what I've told you today. So if you want to review that, this is a good place to review that information. What I want to show you now is this comparison of five Kwakwala alphabets. So these are the Umista alphabet used in Alert Bay, the Grubb alphabet, which was used in a dictionary published in 1977, edited by David Grubb, the Liquila alphabet, which is used in Campbell River, the IPA or International Phonetic Alphabet, and Boaz's alphabet. And if you want to access all materials, all available materials on Kwakwala, then you need to be able to read and transliterate amongst all these different alphabets. Now let's take a look at Dot-Doxapa. All of you studying Nechanal are familiar with the Dot-Doxapa dictionary. This dictionary was published in 1991, and this dictionary, more than any other document, was responsible for establishing the alphabet that we use today. This was also edited by Jay Powell, who was involved in the Upmista language books. But whereas Upmista Cultural Society chose the Bouchard practical alphabet for their materials, NTC, which published the Dot-Doxapa dictionary, chose this phonetic alphabet, which would have been used by in the UVic program that many of our local elders took part in. And you'll see that this is exactly the alphabet that we use today. It's basically the same as the one used in Nootka texts, but it's had a few tweaks. So where Sapir and Swadesh used O, this alphabet now uses U. The long vowels with the dot have been replaced by double letters, and so on. In short, the modern Nechanal alphabet was established by this document, the Dot-Doxapa Dictionary. That is most of what I wanted to tell you about the history of the alphabets that we use. So I started with the alphabets used by Boaz and Sapir, which were inadequate for the languages that they were trying to write. Boaz eventually refined his alphabet until it was adequate for writing Kwakwala, but it was still quite clunky and it's very difficult to learn to read. Sapir completely revolutionized the alphabet that he wrote, that he used to write Nechanal and other American languages, based in large part on his experience studying with Alex Thomas. And in th thanks in part to the insight that a phonemic writing system is a much more efficient way to write a language. The modern phonetic alphabets like Nechanal alphabet and the Liquila alphabet are much better suited to their languages than the original alphabets that Boaz and Sapir used were. We had a question about the International Phonetic Alphabet, and I told you that there is actually very little connection between the International Phonetic Alphabet and the phonetic alphabets used on Vancouver Island. There is unfortunately a myth that is spread, that has been repeated many times on Vancouver Island, that The Neuchanoff alphabet is the International Phonetic Alphabet, or that the Liquila alphabet is the International Phonetic Alphabet. This is incorrect. They are not the International Phonetic Alphabet. They are so-called Americanist alphabets developed by linguists working on North American languages. And it was that 1934 paper by Herzog, Sapir, and others that established those new conventions that enabled us to write Native American languages more accurately. But it was certain key documents that finally established the alphabets that we use today. And as far as I know, the most important documents for establishing the modern alphabets that we use are the Ataxpa Dictionary for Neuchanoth, which was published in 1991, the Umista Language Series, which was published in 81 and established the Umista alphabet, and the linguistic materials published in the 80s in Campbell River, which established the Liquila alphabet that is still used today. The International Phonetic Alphabet was developed in Europe in the late 1800s for writing European languages, and it's been updated several times since then. It is now the most widely used international standard for phonetic transcription of any human language, and it is periodically updated to make sure that it's adequate for writing any human language, and it is maintained by the International Phonetic Association. That is the IPA. The phonetic alphabets that we use here on Vancouver Island, like the Liquila alphabet and the Neuchanoth alphabet, are Americanist alphabets. They're based on the way that that linguists studying Native American languages write. And as to why there's such widespread confusion about this, I think it's probably that phonetic transcription is very complicated, and very few people understand it. So people aren't sure what to call the alphabets. Well, Americanist alphabets aren't standardized the way the IPA is. So there is only one IPA that is standardized for the entire world. But there is no single Americanist alphabet. There's just a whole bunch of Americanist alphabets that share certain characteristics, but each one is a little bit different. So there's no standard chart for Americanist alphabets. Rather, each language has its own. Yes, the best name that I know for your alphabet is the Neuchanoth alphabet. It is unique to your language, but very similar to many other Americanist alphabets. I've mentioned Alex Thomas, but I haven't said much about George Hunt yet today, so let me mention him as well. Just like Edward Sapir and Alex Thomas are responsible for collecting the Sapir-Thomas texts, which are 140 extremely valuable texts from fluent Neuchanoth speakers. Most of them were collected in the 1910s. The last one was collected in 1933 from Alex himself when he went to New Haven, Connecticut to work with Swadesh. There was a similar partnership between Franz Boas and George Hunt. George Hunt was a Quaggiuth man who lived in what's now Fort Rupert. He was actually half Thlinkit, but he was a fluent speaker of Kwakwala, and similarly to Alex Thomas, he quickly picked up the linguist's way of writing his language. So Sapir worked with Alex Thomas to collect texts in Port Alberni, Boas worked with George Hunt to collect texts in the Fort Rupert area. And it is thanks to George Hunt's collecting work that we have a huge body of Quaggiuth texts from around the early 1900s, and they are equally valuable for the study of Kwakwala as the Sapir-Thomas texts are for the study of Neuchanoth. And it is thanks to these two native scholars, George Hunt and Alex Thomas, that we refer to these text collections today as the Sapir-Thomas texts on the one hand and the Boas-Hunt texts on the other.